was his name. "It's all right. You can put them in the meat freezer. It's not in use and it locks from the outside. Then I get a dead preacher, Anosa?"
"I believe that you won't," Anna said.
"Then you believe in vacuum fairies," the guard said. But he unlocked the cell door. The bars swung open. Clarissa hesitated. Behind guard and priest, the disgraced Captain Ashford watched her, peering through his bars to get a look. He needed to shave, and he looked like he'd been crying. For a moment, Clarissa gripped the cold steel bars of her door. The urge to pull them closed, to retreat, was almost overwhelming.
"It's all right," Anna said.
Clarissa let go of the door and stepped out. The guard drew his sidearm and pressed it against the back of her neck. Anna looked pained. Ashford's expression didn't shift a millimeter.
"Is that necessary?" Anna asked.
"Implants," the guard said, and prodded Clarissa to move forward. She walked. The freezer was warm and larger than the galley back on the Cerisier. Strips of metal ran along floor and ceiling and both walls, with notches every few centimeters to allow the Mormon colonists who never were to lock walls and partitions into place. It made sense that the veterinary stalls that had been pressed into service as her prison would be near the slaughterhouse. Harsh white light spilled from the LEDs set into the walls, unsoftened and directional, casting hard shadows. "I'm back in 15 minutes, the guard said as he pushed Clarissa through the doorway. "Anything looks funny, I'll shoot you."
"Thank you for giving us privacy," Anna said, stepping through after her.
The door closed. The latch sounded like the gates of hell closing. The lights flickered, and the first thought that flashed across Clarissa's mind, rich with disapproval, was, shouldn't tie the locking magnet to the same circuit as the control board. It was like a relic from another life. Anna gathered herself, smiled, and put out her hand.
"We've met before," she said, "but we haven't really been introduced. My name's Anna."
A lifetime's etiquette accepted the offered hand on Clarissa's behalf. The woman's fingers were very warm.
"My priest," Clarissa said. "Sorry about that," Anna said. "I didn't mean to presume. I was getting angry and I tried to pull rank. I know people who do worse when they're angry."
Clarissa released the woman's hand.
"I'm a friend of Tilly's. She helped me after the ship crashed. I was hurt and not thinking very straight, and she helped me," she said. "She's good that way."
"She knew your sister too, your father, the whole family," Anna said, then pressed her lips together impatiently. "I wish they'd given us chairs. I feel like we're standing around at a bus terminal."
Anna took a deep breath, sighing out her nose, then sat there in the middle of the room with her legs crossed. She patted the metal decking at her side. Clarissa hesitated, then lowered herself to sit. She had the overwhelming memory of being 5 years old, sitting on a rug in kindergarten.
"That's better," Anna said.
"So, Tilly's told me a lot about you. She's worried."
Clarissa tilted her head. From just the form, it seemed like the place where she would reply. She felt the urge to speak, and she couldn't imagine what she would say. After a moment, Anna went on, trying again without seeming to.
"I'm worried about you too."
"Why?"
Anna's eyes clouded. For a moment, she seemed to be having some internal conversation, but only for a moment. She leaned forward, her hands clasped.
"I didn't help you before. I saw you just before the Sung Un blew up," she said. "Just before you set off the bomb."
"It was too late by then," Clarissa said.
"Ren had already been dead.
You couldn't have stopped it."
"You're right," Anna said.
"That's not the only reason I'm here. I also
I lost someone. When all the ships stopped, I lost someone.
Someone you cared about, Clarissa said. Someone you loved?
Someone I hardly knew, but it was a real loss. And also, I was scared of you. I am scared of you. But Tilly told me a lot about you, and it's helped me to get past some of my fear.
Not all of it?
No, not all of it. Something deep in the structure of the ship thumped, the whole structure around them ringing for a moment like a gigantic bell tolling far, far away.
I could kill you, Clarissa said, before they got the door open.
I know. I saw.
Clarissa put her hand out, her palm against the notched runner. The finish was smooth and the metal cool.
You want a confession, then? She said.
If you want to offer one.
I did it, Clarissa said. I sabotaged the Rocinante and the Sung Un. I killed Ren. I killed some people back on Earth. I lied about who I was. All of it. I'm guilty.
All right.
Are we done, then?
Anna scratched her nose and sighed. I came out to the ring, even though it upset my wife, even though it meant not seeing my baby for months. I told myself that I wanted to come see it, to help people make sense of it, and whatever it was, to not be afraid. You came out here to save your father, to redeem him.
Is that what Tilly says?
She's not as polite about it. Clarissa coughed out a laugh. Everything she could say felt trite. Worse, it felt naive and stupid. Jim Holden destroyed my family, and I wanted my father to be proud of me. And I was wrong.
I did what I did, Clarissa said. You can tell them that, the security people. You can tell them I confessed to it all.
If you'd like, I'll tell them.
I would. I want that.
Why did you try to kill Naomi?
I wanted to kill all of them, Clarissa said, and each word was hard to speak, as though they were too large to fit through her throat. They were part of him, and I wanted him not to be, just not to exist at all anymore. I wanted everyone to know he is a bad man.
Do you still want that?
I don't care, Clarissa said. You can tell them.
And Naomi?
I'm going to see her.
Is there anything you'd want me to tell her in particular?
Clarissa remembered the woman's face, bruised and bleeding. She flexed her hand, feeling the mech's glove against her fingers. It would have taken nothing to snap the woman's neck, a feather's weight of pressure. She wondered why she hadn't. The difference between savoring the moment and hesitating warred at the back of her mind, and her memory supported both, or neither.
Tell her, I hope she gets well soon.
Do you hope that?
Or am I just being polite, you mean? Clarissa said.
Tell her whatever you want. I don't care.
All right, Anna said.
Can I ask a question?
Can I stop you?
Yes.
The silence was no more than three long breaths together.
You can ask me a question.
Do you want to be redeemed?
I don't believe in God.
Do you want to be redeemed by something other than God, then?
If there was forgiveness for you, could you accept it?
The sense of outrage began in Clarissa's stomach and bloomed out through her chest. It curled her lips and furrowed her brow. For the first time since she'd lost consciousness trying to beat her way through the locker in the Rocinante, she remembered what anger felt like, how large it was.
Why should I be forgiven for anything?
I did it. That's all.
But if, what kind of justice would that be?
Oh, you killed Ren, but you're sorry now, so it's okay? Fuck that.
And if that's how your god works, then fuck him too. The freezer door clanked. Clarissa looked up at it, resenting the accident of timing and then realizing they'd heard her yelling. They were coming to save the preacher. She balled her hands into fists and looked down at them. They were going to take her back to her cell. She felt in her gut and her throat how little she wanted that. "It's all right," Anna said as the guard stepped into the freezer, his sidearm trained on Clarissa. "We're okay."
"Yeah, no," the guard said. His gaze was sharp and focused, frightened. "Time's passed. Meeting's over."
Anna looked at Clarissa with something like frustration in her expression, not with her, but with the situation, with not getting everything to be just the way she wanted it. Clarissa had some sympathy for that.
"I'd like to talk with you again," Anna said, "if it's all right."
"You know where I live?" Clarissa said with a shrug. "I don't go out much."
Chapter 35. Anna. Bull wasn't in his office when she arrived. A muscular young woman with a large gun on her hip shrugged when Anna asked if she could wait for him, then ignored her and continued working. A wall screen was set to the radio-free slow zone feed, where a young Earther man was leaning in toward Monica Stewart and speaking earnestly. His skin was a bright pink that didn't seem to be his natural color. Anna thought he looked peeled.
"I haven't changed my commitment to autonomy for the Brazilian shared interest zones," he said. "If anything, I feel like I've broadened it."
"Broadened it how?" Monica asked. She seemed genuinely interested. "It was a gift." The peeled man tapped at the air with his fingertips. Anna felt sure she'd seen him on the Thomas Prince, but she couldn't for the life of her remember his name. She had the vague sense he was a painter, some kind of artist, certainly.
"We've all changed," he said, "by coming here, by going through the trials that we're all going through. We've all been changed. When we go back, none of us will be the people we were before. The tragedy and the loss and the sense of wonder changes what it means to be human. Do you know what I mean?"
Oddly, Anna thought she did.
Being a minister meant being in the middle of people's lives. Anna had counseled dating congregation members, presided over their weddings, baptized their babies, and, in one heartbreaking case, presided over the infant's funeral a year later. Members of the congregation included her in most of the important events of their lives. She was used to it, and mostly enjoyed the deep connection to people it brought. Charting the course of a life was making a map of the ways each event changed the person, leaving someone different on the other side. Passing through the ring and the tragedies it had brought wouldn't leave any of them the same. The exodus from the rest of the fleet to the behemoth was in full swing. The tent cities spread across the curved inner surface of the habitation drum like wildflowers on a field of flat, ceramic, steel-colored earth. Anna saw tall, gangly belters helping offload wounded earthers from emergency carts, plugging in IVs and other medical equipment, fluffing pillows and mopping brows. Inners and outers offloaded crates in mixed groups, without comment. Anna couldn't help but be warmed by that, even in the face of their recent disaster. Maybe it took real tragedy to get them all working together, but it did. They did. There was hope in that. Now, if they could just figure out how to do it without the blood and screaming. "Your work has been criticized," Monica Stewart said, "as advocating violence." The peeled man nodded.
"I used to reject that," he said. "I've come to the conclusion that it may be valid, though. I think when we come home, there will be some readjustment."
"Because of the ring?"
"And the slow zone. And what's happened here."
"Do you think you would encourage other political artists to come out here?"
"Absolutely."
Chris, her young officer, had asked about organizing mixed-group church services on the behemoth. She'd assumed he meant mixed religions at first, but it turned out he meant a church group with earthers and Martians and belters. Mixed, as if God categorized people based on the gravity they'd grown up in. It had occurred to Anna that there really wasn't any such thing as a mixed church group. No matter what they looked like, or what they chose to call him, when a group of people called out to God together, they were one. Even if there was no God, or one God, or many gods, it didn't matter. Faith, hope, and love, Paul had written. But the greatest of these is love. Faith and hope were very important to Anna. But she could see Paul's point in a way she hadn't before. Love didn't need anything else. It didn't need a common belief or a common identity. Anna thought of her child and felt a rush of longing and loneliness. She could almost feel Nami in her arms, almost smell the intoxicating new baby scent on her head. Nono, the Ugandan, and Anna, the Russian, had blended themselves together and made Nami. Not a mix, nothing so crude as that. More than just the sum of her parts and origins. A new thing, individual and unique. No mixed group, then. Just a group. A new thing, perfect and unique. She couldn't imagine God would see it any other way. Anna was pretty sure she had her first sermon, too. She was about halfway through typing up an outline for her No Mixed Groups in God's Eyes sermon on her handset when Bull came through the door, his mechanical legs whining and thumping with each step. Anna thought it gave Bull even more gravitas than he'd had before. He moved with a deliberateness caused by mechanical necessity, but easily mistaken for formality and stateliness. The electric whine of the machine and the heavy thump of his tread were a sort of herald calling out his arrival. Anna imagined the annoyance Bull would feel if she told him this, and giggled a little to herself. Bull was in the middle of speaking to a subordinate and didn't even notice her.
"I don't care how they feel about it, Serge. The agreement was no armed military personnel on the ship. Even if there weren't a shitload of guns built in, those suits would still be weapons. Confiscate their gear or throw them off the damn ship."
"See, Hiffy," the other man with him replied. "Take it how, Sasa? Can opener?"
"Charm the bastards. If we can't make them do anything now while we're friends, what do we do when they decide we aren't friends? 4 Marines in recon armor decide they own this ship, they fucking own it. So, we take the armor away before they do. I don't even want that stuff in the drum. Lock it in the bridge armory."
Serge looked deeply unhappy at this task.
"Some help, maybe? Take as many as you want, but if you don't need them, it's only gonna piss the Marines off. And if you do, they won't actually help."
Serge paused, mouth open, then closed it with a snap and left. Bull noticed Anna for the first time and said,
"What can I do for you, preacher?"
"Anna, please. I came to talk about Clarissa Mao," she said.
"If you're not her lawyer or her union representative..."
"I'm her priest. What happens to her now?" Bull sighed again.
"She confessed to blowing up a ship. Nothing much good comes after that."
"People say you space the men for selling drugs. They say you're hard, cold."
"Do they?" Bull said.
Anna couldn't tell if the surprise in his voice was genuine or mocking. "Please don't kill her," she said, leaning closer and looking him in the eye. "Don't you let anyone else kill her either."
"Why not?"
The way he said it wasn't a challenge or a threat. It was as if he just didn't know that answer, and sort of wondered. Anna swallowed her dread. "I can't help her if she's dead," No offense, but that's not really my concern. I thought you were the law and order here.
I'm aiming for order, mostly.
She deserves a trial, and if everyone knows what you know about her, she won't get one. They'll riot. They'll kill her. At least, help me get her a trial. The large man sighed.
So, are you looking for a trial, or just a way to stall for time?
Stall for time, Anna said. Bull nodded, weighing something in his mind, then gestured for her to precede him into his office. After she sat down next to his battered desk, he clumped around the small space, making a pot of coffee. It seemed an extravagance considering the newly implemented water rationing, but then Anna remembered Bull was now the second most powerful person in the slow zone. The privileges of rank. She didn't want coffee, but accepted the offered cup to allow Bull a moment of generosity. Generosity now might lead to more later, when she was asking for something she really wanted.
When Holden starts telling people who actually sabotaged the Sung-un, and he's Jim Holden, so he will, the UN people are going to ask for Clarissa. And if they give me enough that I can get everyone here, together and safe, until we can get out of this trap, I'm going to give her to them. Not off the ship, but in here.
What will they do? Anna took a companionable sip of her coffee. It burned her tongue, and tasted like acid.
Probably they'll put together a tribunal of flag officers, have a short trial, and throw her in a recycler. I'd say space her, normally, but that seems wasteful, considering our predicament. Supplies sent from home will take as long to fly through the slow zone to us as they'll take to get to the ring.
His voice was flat, emotionless. He was discussing logistics, not a young woman's life. Anna suppressed a shudder and said, Mr. Baca, do you believe in God? To his credit, he tried not to roll his eyes. He almost succeeded.
I believe in whatever gets you through the night.
Don't be flip, Anna said, and was gratified when Bull straightened a little in his walker. In her experience, most strong-willed men had equally strong-willed mothers, and she knew how to hit some of the same buttons.
Look, Bull said, trying to reclaim the initiative. Anna spoke over the top of him.
Forget God for a moment, she said. Do you believe in the concept of forgiveness, in the possibility of redemption, in the value of every human life, no matter how tainted or corrupted?
Fuck no, Bull said. I think it is entirely possible to go so far into the red you can't ever balance the books.
Sounds like the voice of experience. How far have you been?
Far enough to know there's a too damn far.
And you're comfortable being the judge of where that line is? Bull pulled on the frame of his walker, shifting his weight in the straps that held him. He looked wistfully at the office chair he could no longer use. Anna felt bad for him, broken at the worst possible time, trying to keep his tiny world in order and burning through the last reserves of his strength with reckless abandon. The bruised eyes and yellow skin suddenly seemed like a flashing battery indicator, warning that the power was almost gone. Anna felt a pang of guilt for adding to his burden.
I don't want to kill that girl, he said, taking another sip of the terrible coffee. In fact, I don't give a shit about her one way or the other, as long as she's locked up and isn't a danger to my ship. The one you should talk to is Holden. He's the one who's going to get the torches and pitchforks crowd wound up.
But the Martians
surrendered 20 hours ago.
Anna blinked.
They've been wanting to for days, Bull said. We just had to find a way to let them save face.
Save face?
They got a story they can tell where they don't look weak. That's all they needed. But if we didn't find something, they'd have stuck to their posts until they all died. Nothing ever killed more people than being afraid to look like a sissy.
Holden's coming here, then?
Already be on a shuttle escorted by 4 recon marines, which is another fucking headache for me. But how about this? I won't talk about the girl until I have reason to. What Holden does, though, he just does.
Fine. Then I'll talk to him when he arrives, Anna said.
Good luck with that, Bull said.
Chapter 36. Holden. When the Martians came for him, 2 men and 2 women, all in uniform and all armed, Holden's isolation-drunk mind had spun out in a dozen directions at once. The captain had found room for him in the medical clinic, and she wanted to grill him again about what happened on the station, and they were going to throw him out an airlock, and they'd had news that Naomi was dead, and they'd had news that she wasn't. It felt like every neuron he had from his brain down to his toes was on the edge of firing. It was all he could do not to launch himself off the cell's wall and into the narrow corridor.
The prisoner will please identify himself, one of the men said.
James Holden. I mean, it's not like you have very many prisoners here, right? Because I've been trying to find someone to talk with for it feels like about a decade since I got here, and I'm pretty sure there isn't so much as a dust mite in this place besides me.
He bit his lips to stop talking. He'd been alone and scared for too long. He hadn't understood how much it was affecting him. Even if he hadn't been mentally ill when he came to the Hammurabi, he was going to be real soon now if nothing changed.
Record shows prisoner identified himself as James Holden, the man said. Come along.
The corridor outside the cells was so narrow that 2 guards ahead and 2 behind was effectively a wall. The low Martian gravity made their bodies more akin to belters than to him, and all 4 of them hunched slightly, bending in over him. Holden had never felt so relieved to be in a tiny, cramped hallway in his life. But even the relief was pushed aside by his anxiety. The guards didn't actually push him so much as start to move with an authority that suggested that he really should match them. The hatch was only 5 meters away, but after being in his cell, it seemed like a huge distance.
Was there any word from the Rossi?
No one spoke.
What's going on? You're being evacuated, the man said.
Evacuated?
Part of the surrender agreement.
Surrender agreement? You're surrendering?
Why are you surrendering?
We lost the politics, one of the women behind him said. If the skiff they loaded him onto wasn't the same one that had taken him back from the station, it was close enough that he couldn't tell the difference. There were only 4 soldiers this time, all of them in full combat armor. The rest of the spaces were taken up by men and women in standard naval uniform. Holden thought at first they were the wounded, but when he looked closer, none of them seemed to have anything worse than minor injuries. It was the exhaustion in their faces and bodies that made them seem broken. The acceleration burn wasn't even announced. The thrust barely shifted the crash couches. All around him, the Martians slept or brooded. Holden scratched at the hard, flexible plastic restraints on his wrists and ankles, and no one told him to stop. Maybe that was a good sign. He tried to do the math in his head. If the new top speed was about as fast as a launched grenade, then every hour they'd travel. As tired as he was, he couldn't make the numbers add up to anything. If he'd had his hand terminal, it would have been a few seconds' work. Still, he couldn't see asking to have it. And it didn't matter. He slept and woke and slept again. The proximity klaxon woke him from a dream about making bread with someone who was his father, Caesar, and also Fred Johnson, and trying to find the salt. It took him a moment to remember where he was. The skiff was small enough that when the other ship's crew banged against the airlock, Holden could hear it. From his seat, he couldn't see the airlock open.
The first thing he knew was a slightly different scent in the air, something rich and oddly humid. And then four new people stepped into his view. They were belters, a broad-faced woman, a thick man with a startling white beard, and two shaven-headed men so similar they might have been twins. The twins had the split circle of the OPA tattooed on their arms. All four wore sidearms. The behemoth, Holden thought. They'd surrendered to the behemoth. That was weird. One of the Marines, still in battle armor, floated over to them. The belters didn't show any sign of fear. Holden gave them credit for that. "I am Sergeant Alexander Verbinski," the Martian said. "I have been ordered to hand over this skiff and her crew and company in accordance with the agreement of surrender." The woman and white-bearded man looked at each other. Holden thought he could see the question, "You gonna tell them they can't take their suits in?" pass between them. The woman shrugged. "Bienales," she said. "Welcome aboard. Bring them through in six-packs and we'll get you sorted, Sasa." "Yes, ma'am," Verbinski said. "Corin," one of the twins said. The woman turned to see him gesture toward Holden with his chin. "Pacone sa palansi?" The woman's nod was curt. "We'll take Holden out now," she said. "Your show," the Marine said. Holden thought from his tone he'd have been as happy to shoot him. That might have been paranoia, though. The belters escorted him through the airlock and a long mylar tube to the engineering deck of the behemoth. A dozen people were waiting with hand terminals at the ready, prepared for the slow, slogging administrative work of dealing with a defeated enemy. Holden got to skip the line, and he wasn't sure it was an honor. The woman floating near the massive doors at the transition point where the engineering section met the drum looked too young for her captain's insignia. Her hair, pulled back in a severe bun, reminded him of a teacher he'd had once when he'd still been on Earth. "Captain Pa," the security woman, Corin, one of the twins had called her, said. "You wanted to talk with this one?" "Captain Holden," Captain Pa said with a nod. "Welcome aboard the behemoth. I'm giving you liberty of the ship, but I want you to understand that there are some conditions." Holden blinked. He'd expected another brig, at least. Freedom of the ship was pretty much the same as freedom, period. It wasn't like there were a lot of places he could go. All right, he said. "You are to make yourself available for debriefing whenever you are called upon, no exceptions. You are not to discuss what happened or didn't happen on the station with anyone besides myself or the security chief." "I know how to shut it off," Holden said. The younger captain's expression shifted. "You what?" "I know how to get the protomolecule to take us all off of lockdown," he said, and went on to explain all of what he'd told Captain Gikonda again, seeing Miller, the plan to lull the station into a lower alert level so that the dead man could shut it down, fighting to sound calm, rational, and sane as he did it. He didn't go so far as the massive civilization-destroying invasion that had wiped out the protomolecule's creators. It all sounded bad enough without that. Pa listened carefully, her face a mask. She wasn't someone he'd want to play poker against. He had the powerful, painful memory of Naomi telling him that she'd teach him how to play poker, and his throat closed. The security man with a white beard floated up, two angry-looking Martians matching Vector behind him. "Captain," the belter said, barely restrained rage in his voice. "Just a minute, Mr. Gutmann's daughter," she said, then turned back to Holden. She had to be overwhelmed, but it was only a tightness in her jaw, if it was even that much. "I'll take that under advisement, but for the immediate future, my crew?" "They're in the civilian medical bay," Pa said, and the white-bearded man cleared his throat in a way that meant he hadn't needed to. "There are directions posted, if you'll excuse me." "Captain,
There's a load of contraband among the new prisoners, Gutman's daughter said, hitting the last word hard. Thought you'd want to address that before it got to Bull. Pa took a deep breath and pushed off after her security man. A few seconds later, Holden realized he hadn't been dismissed, so much as forgotten. Fallen down the list of things that the young captain had to do right now, and so fuck him. He moved out past the transition point, and to the platforms where the axis of the little world spun. There was a long ramp for carts, and he shuffled down it, the spin slowly shifting from pure Coriolis to the sensation of weight. He could feel in his knees how long he'd been on the float, and he hoped that the medical bays weren't too far away. If they'd been on the far side of the system, though, he'd have grabbed an EVA suit, as much spare air as he could haul, and started out. The idea that he was breathing the same air as Naomi and Alex and Amos was like a drug. Only Captain Pa hadn't actually said that. All she'd said was that his crew was there. The remaining might have been implied. He tried to jog, but got winded after only a couple of minutes and had to pause to catch his breath. The great body of the drum stretched out before him, a world wrapped into a tube. The long strip of the false sun glowed white above him, now that there was a clear above, and reached out across 2 kilometers to a swirling ramp at the other end, the mirror of the one he was on. Thin clouds drifted in torii around the unbearable brightness. The air clung to him, the heat pressing at his skin. But he could imagine the bare metal of the drum's surface covered in green, the air sweet with a scent of apple blossoms, the cycle of evaporation and condensation cooling it all. Or, if not, at least making it into a long, permanent summer afternoon. It was a dream. Someone else's, and doomed now to failure, but worthy, beautiful, even in ruins. Captain Holden, can I speak with you? It was a small woman with bright red hair pulled tight into braids and wearing a plain brown suit. She was the sort of very comfortable middle-aged that always made him think of his mother's. My name is Anushka Volodov, she said with a smile. But you can call me Anna, if you like.
You can call me Jim, he said, holding out a hand.
He almost had his wind back. Anna shook his hand without a hint of fear. His most dangerous man in the solar system reputation must not have reached her yet.
Eastern European?
Russian, she replied with a nod. Born in Kimri, but a Muscovite for most of my adult life. North American?
Montana, farming collective.
I hear Montana is nice.
Population density is good, still more cows than people.
Anna nodded and plucked at her suit. Holden got the sense that she actually had something she wanted to say, but was having a hard time getting to the point.
Kimri was like that. It's a tourist place, you know. The lakes, Anna started.
Anna, Holden cut her off gently. Do you need to say something to me?
I do, she said. I need to ask you not to tell anyone about Clarissa and what she did.
Holden nodded. Okay, he said. Who's Clarissa and what did she do?
The woman tilted her head.
They didn't tell you.
I don't think they liked me much, Holden said. Is there something I should know?
Well, this is awkward. Just after the catastrophe, a girl calling herself Melba attacked your ship, Anna said. It's a long story, but I followed her and tried to help. Your first officer, Naomi? She was hurt in the attack. Badly.
Holden felt the universe contract. Naomi was hurt while he'd been dicking around with Miller on the station. His hands were shaking.
Where is she? He asked, not sure if he meant Naomi or the woman who'd hurt her.
Naomi's here. They brought her over to the behemoth, Anna said. She's in the medical bay right now receiving treatment.
They assure me she'll recover. The rest of your crew is here too. They were hurt earlier, when the speed limit changed.
They're alive?
Yes, Anna said, they are. The mix of relief and sorrow and anger and guilt made the ship seem to spin a little beneath him. Anna put a hand on his arm to steady him.
Who is this Melba, and why did she attack my crew?
It's not her real name. My friend knows her family. Apparently, she has something of an obsession with you. Her name is Clarissa Mao.
Mao.
The mysterious and powerful Julie. The Julie rebuilt by the protomolecule, like his ghostly Miller. The Julie who had hired Cohen the Soundman to hack their ship. The Julie he'd sculpted for them later, who'd never looked quite right. The Julie who'd been manipulating every detail of his life for the last year just to get them through the gate and down to the station. It wasn't Julie at all.
She's not well, Anna was saying, but I believe that she can be reached, if there's time.
But if they kill her...
Where's Naomi? Do you know where she is?
I do, Anna said, and then, I'm sorry, I may have been a little wrapped up in my own issue. Can I take you there?
Please, Holden said.
15 minutes later, Holden stepped into a small room in the medical ward that his little family had to themselves. Naomi lay on a gurney, one arm in an inflatable cast. Her face was mottled with half-healed bruises. Tears stung his eyes, and for a moment he couldn't speak. A killing rage burned in him. This wasn't a disaster. It wasn't an accident. Someone had done this to her. When she saw him, her smile was gentle and amused.
Hey, she said.
In a moment he was at her side, holding her good hand, his throat too thick for speech. There were tears in Naomi's eyes too, but no anger. He was amazed how grateful he was for that.
Anna, Naomi said.
She looked genuinely pleased to see her, which was a good start. Jim, you met Anna? She saved me from the psycho with a demolition mech.
Saved us too, I guess, Amos said. So, thanks for that, Red. I guess I owe you one.
It took Holden a moment to realize that Red meant Anna. She seemed surprised by it too. I'm happy I was able to help. I'm afraid I was very stoned on pain medication at the time. It could easily have gone the other way.
Just take the marker, Alex said. Soon as you figure out what Amos is good for, you can trade it in.
Asshole, Amos said and threw a pillow at him.
Thank you, Holden said. If you saved them, I owe you everything. I'm happy I was able to help, she repeated. To Naomi, she said, you look better than the last time I saw you.
Getting better, Naomi replied, then tested her injured arm with a grimace.
We'll see how mobile it is once the bones knit up. Anna nodded and smiled at her, and then the smile faded. Jim, I'm sorry, but I still need to speak to you, she said to him. Maybe privately?
No. I never thought I'd see these people again. I'm staying right here. If you want to talk to me, go ahead and do it.
The woman's eyes shifted between the crewmen. Her expression could have been hope or polite resignation. I need something, she finally said.
Anything,
Amos answered instantly, sitting up in bed a bit. Holden knew Anna wouldn't understand how literally Amos meant that. Hopefully a preacher didn't need anyone murdered.
If we got it, Alex said, it's yours.
Amos nodded agreement. Anna directed her answer at Holden. I've talked to the head of security, and he's agreed to keep quiet about Clarissa's confession, all that she's done. I need you to keep quiet, too. Holden frowned, but didn't reply. Naomi said, Why? Well, Anna said, it's James Holden,
He has a reputation for announcing things. Not, why ask us, Naomi said. Why don't you want people to know? Anna nodded. If it gets out, given our current situation, they'll probably execute her.
Good, Holden said.
She does kind of have it coming, Amos added.
Anna held her hands tight in front of her and nodded. She didn't mean that she agreed, only that she heard them, that she understood. I need you to forgive her, she said. If nothing else, as a favor to me. You said I could have anything. That's what I want. In the pause, Amos let out a long breath. Alex's eyebrows were climbing up his forehead. Why? Naomi said again, her voice calm. Anna pressed her lips thin. She's not evil. I believe that Clarissa did what she did out of a love. A sick love, but love. And if she's dead, there won't be any hope for her. And I have to hope. Holden saw the words wash over Naomi, a sudden pain in her eyes that he didn't understand. She pulled back her lips, baring her teeth. Her whisper was obscene and so quiet that no one but him could hear it. He squeezed her hand, feeling the bones of her fingers against his own. Okay, Naomi said. We'll keep quiet. The rage flared in his breast. Speaking was suddenly easy. I won't, Holden said. We're talking about an insane member of the Mao clan, the people who've twice tried to kill everyone in the solar system, who followed us all the way to the ring, tried to kill us, to kill you. She blew up a spaceship full of innocent people just to try to make me look bad. Who knows how many other people she's killed? If the UN wants to space her, I'll push the damn button myself. There was a long moment of silence. Holden watched Anna's face fall as he crushed her hopes. Alex started chuckling, and everyone turned to look at him.
Yeah, Alex said in his drawling voice. I mean, Naomi only got beat half to death. She can cut this Clarissa slack, it's no big deal, but the captain's girlfriend got hurt. He's the real victim here.
The room got quiet again as everyone stopped breathing. Blood flushed into Holden's face, rushing like a river in his ears. It was hatred and pain and outrage. His mind seemed to flicker, and the urge to strike out at Alex for the insult was almost too much to resist. And then he understood Alex's words, saw Naomi's eyes on his, and it all drained away. Why? He wanted to ask. But it didn't matter. It was Naomi, and she'd made her decision. It wasn't his revenge to take. He was spent, exhausted. He wanted to curl up on the floor there with his people around him and sleep for days. He tried out a smile.
Wow, he finally said. Sometimes I am just a gigantic asshole.
No, Amos said. I'm right there with you. I'd kill this Clarissa myself for the shit she's pulled. But Red asked us to let it go, and Naomi's playing along, so I guess we got it too.
Don't get me wrong, Holden said to Anna, his voice cold. I will never forgive this woman for what she's done. Never. But I won't turn her over to the UN as a favor to you, and because if Naomi can let it go, I guess I have to. Thank you, Anna said.
Things change, Red, Amos said. You let us know. Because I'd still be happy to kill the shit out of her.
Chapter 37. Clarissa. She didn't know at first what the change was. It presented in little things. The decking she'd been able to sleep on like she was dead suddenly wasn't comfortable. She found herself wondering more what her father did in his cell
5 billion kilometers away, and for all she knew, in another universe. She tapped her hands against the bars just to hear the subtle differences in tone that the different bars made when struck. And she hated. Hatred was nothing new. She'd lived with it for long enough that the memories of the times before all carried the same colors of rage and righteousness. Only before, she'd hated Jim Holden, and now she hated Clarissa Mao. Hating herself had a kind of purity that she found appealing, cathartic. Jim Holden had shifted out from under her thirst for vengeance, refusing to be consumed by it. She could live in the flames, and know she deserved to burn. It was like playing a game on easy. She tapped the bars. There wasn't enough variation between them to play a melody. If there had been, she would have, just for something to distract her. She wondered whether her extra glands would be enough to bend the bars or lift the door off its hinges. Not that it would matter. At best, leaving her cell would have meant being gunned down by an OPA guard. At worst, it would have meant freedom. The captain had stopped talking to her, at least. She watched the stream of visitors coming to him. She had a pretty clear idea which of the guards answered to him, and there were a couple of Martians in military uniforms who came, and a few UN officers, too. They came and met with Captain Ashford, speaking in the low voices of people who took themselves and each other very seriously. She recognized the sound from eavesdropping on her father. She remembered that she had been impressed by it once. Now it made her want to laugh. She paced her tiny world. She did push-ups and lunges and all the pointless exercises that the light gravity allowed. And she waited for punishment, or for the end of the world. When she slept, Wren was there. So she tried not to sleep much. And slowly, with a sense of growing horror, she understood that the change was her coming back to herself, falling awake. After her failure on the Rocinante, there'd been a kind of peace, a disconnection from everything. But even before that, she'd been in a sort of dream. She couldn't tell if it had started with the day she'd killed Wren, or when she'd taken the identification to become Melba Co, or earlier even, when she'd heard her father had been arrested. Whenever she'd lost herself, she was coming back now, and it was like her whole consciousness was suffering pins and needles. It was worse than pain, and it drove her in circles. The more she thought about it, the clearer the mind games that the red-haired priest had played on her were. The priest and, in her way, Tilly Fagan, too. Maybe Anna had come thinking that the promise of forgiveness would need to be dangled in front of her in order to get the confession. If so, the woman was double stupid. First, because she'd thought Clarissa wouldn't admit to what she'd done, and second, because she'd thought forgiveness was something Clarissa wanted, or would accept. "I'd like to speak with you again," she'd said. And at that time, it had seemed so sincere, so real. Only she hadn't come back. A small, rational part of Clarissa's mind knew that it hadn't really been that long. Being in the cell changed the experience of time and made her feel isolated. That was the point of cells. Still, Anna hadn't come back, and neither had Holden, or Naomi, whom Clarissa hadn't quite killed. They were done with her, and why shouldn't they be? Clarissa didn't have anything else to offer them, except maybe a warning that the power on the ship was about to change hands again, as if that would even matter. Who got to sit in the doomed ship's captain's chair seemed like a terribly petty thing to worry about. It was like arguing about who was the prettiest girl in the prison camp. Still, it was the only show playing, so she watched. The voices from the other cell had taken on a new tone, an urgency.
Even before the well-dressed man came down toward her, she knew that their little drama was about to play out. He stood at her door, looking in. His white hair, brilliant and perfectly coiffed, just made him look old. There was a darkness in his professionally avuncular eyes. When he put his hands around the bars, it looked like he was the one imprisoned.
"I'm guessing that you don't remember me," he said.
His voice was sad and sweet, both.
"Father Cortez," she said, "I remember who you are. You used to play golf with my father."
He chuckled ruefully, stepping his feet back from the bars in a way that brought his forehead closer to them.
"I did, but that was a long time ago. You wouldn't have been more than, what, 7?
I've seen you in the news feed since."
"Ah," he said.
His eyes focused on nothing.
"That feels like it was a long time ago, too. I was just now talking with the captain. He said he's been trying to convince you to join us, only he hasn't had much success."
2 guards came in, walking down the rows of stalls. She recognized them both as Ashford's allies. Cortez didn't take notice of them at all.
"No, he hasn't," she said. And then, "He lies a lot."
Cortez's eyebrows rose.
"Lies?"
"He said he could get me amnesty. When we get back home, he could take me to Ceres and put me under OPA protection. Only he can't do that."
Cortez took a long breath and let it out again. "No. No, he can't. May I be honest with you?"
"I don't see that I'm in a position to stop you," Clarissa said.
"I think that you and I have a great deal in common. You have blood on your hands, the blood of innocence."
She tried to sneer, tried to retreat into a dismissive pose, but it only left her feeling exposed and adolescent. Cortez went on as if he hadn't noticed. Maybe he hadn't.
"I was instrumental in bringing us through the gate. The combined force, representing all 3 divisions of humanity, joined gloriously together."
Bitterness darkened the words, but then he smiled, and she thought maybe there was something as wounded in him as there was in her.
"Vainglory is an occupational hazard for men in my profession. It's one I've battled with limited success, I'm afraid."
"I was the one who drove Holden through the ring," Clarissa said, unsure whether she was confessing a crime or offering Cortez an out.
"Yes. And I let all the others in after him. And so when they died, it was because I had blinded them to the dangers they faced. I led my flock to the slaughterhouse. I thought I was putting my faith in Providence, but..."
Tears filled his eyes, and his expression went empty.
"Father," she said. "When I was a child," Cortez said, "my cousin found a dead man. The body was in an arroyo out behind our land. She dared me to go and look at it. I was desperately afraid. But I went, and I held my head high, and I pretended that I wasn't in order not to be. When the medics arrived, we found out the man had died from one of the old hemorrhagic fevers. They put me on prophylactic antivirals for the rest of the summer. So perhaps I've always done this. I thought I was putting my faith in Providence, but perhaps I was only covering my own fears. And my own fears led a great many people to die.
It's not your fault, but it is my problem. And perhaps my failings were in the service of a greater good.
You are right, my dear. There will be no amnesty for you, or for me either. But not for the reason you imagine."
Clarissa stood. Cortez's gaze was on her like a weight. The intimacy of the old man's confession, and the fear and grief carried with such dignity, made her respect him, even though she'd never particularly liked him.
The dangers that the